Hello and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, and doing our audio engineering today is James Zipperoth. Here on Teen Scientist, I bring you stories of groundbreaking innovations in the STEAM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective, featuring young researchers and respected experts in their fields at the local, national, and international levels. Today's guest is Dr. Emily Eves Leiter, the Administrative Director for GS Learns, GS Creates, and Clinical Research at Good Shepherd Rehabilitation Network. Her career spans clinical practice as a physical therapist, neuroscience research coordination at Mount Sinai Hospital, and leadership in driving clinical learning, innovation, and research at Good Shepherd. She holds a BA in neuroscience from Franklin and Marshall College and a doctor of physical therapy from Arcadia University. She currently oversees programs that support professional education, creative rehabilitation, and research development across the health system. Dr. Leiter, thank you so much for being here.
I'm very excited to be here with you, Abigail. Thank you.
So to begin, I want to explore the roots of your interest in science. So you studied neuroscience as an undergraduate. What first drew you into kind of wanting to do that?
So I have to say my earliest interest is more broadly in science, and that's really from my dad and then my brother. So science was always around me, and I was always interested in people, and it became interest in people and then into the brain, which, you know, for me, neuroscience is kind of the melding of, you know, brain behavior.
Yeah, combining them.
Yeah. So it was a really natural fit for me. But I think that, you know, if I reflect back, I've always been interested in science, whether it's kind of more of like the hard sciences, physics or chemistry, or kind of what, you know, are more softer people sciences.
So I know you mentioned like your dad and like being around science, but was there something that really sparked the interest of this is what I want to go into, like mentor, maybe teacher, or an experience even that was like, this is what I'm going to be or what I'm going to do?
So in high school, I had a AP psychology class, and that was really the first time that I started to think about why we did certain things being influenced by our biology. And so I found that endlessly fascinating. And really, it was curiosity about, you know, how much could I learn? And it was just kind of adventurous to uncover the different layers of that. And that's really what sparked my interest.
I took AP Psych. I loved it. It is an incredible course. And it's definitely very interesting to know, like, some things that you do isn't because of you. It's like biological. It's not. Speaking of that, did you see yourself ever working in healthcare? Because you like were like, oh, I want to work with that. But then the healthcare kind of, or did that come way later when you were kind of trying to look for a career?
So I always wanted to help people. I knew that even when I was, you know, in elementary school, I would volunteer to help children who had, you know, various disabilities play soccer. And that for me was very meaningful. And so healthcare and science is kind of the blend of helping people where I can apply the scientific and curiosity interests that I had.
Yeah, which makes sense because it all like kind of combines. You're like mixing it all together. So neuroscience became the foundation of your academic path. So let's kind of move forward into your patient care. You later earned your Doctor of Physical Therapy at Arcadia University. What kind of motivated you to then go apply science directly through clinical practice?
So just prior to entering physical therapy school, I worked as a research coordinator. And in that moment, I had I was involved in a study with individuals who had traumatic brain injury. And it was that moment that I kind of realized I wanted to be more hands-on in helping people. And so that's what then led me to clinical care, where I can kind of translate evidence into practice, into meaningful changes on people's lives.
Which goes along with my next question. What aspects of patient care were most meaningful to you? And during your training, do you have any other stories of that? Because I know you just mentioned working with that kind of influence going into that, but then when you were learning, have you experienced more?
Yeah. One of the things I really enjoyed about physical therapy was that I could manipulate the environment around the person to help them do something more easily or better. So for me, it was a little bit of creativity in how I was able to impact how somebody was functioning, and that made an improvement in their life. So that was really motivating for me. And then understanding the biologic basis for what I was doing was also really rewarding.
Yeah, because kind of combining your neuroscience then into practice, play, kind of doing both, which is really cool and kind of cool that you can put them together. And I think that's pretty fascinating. When you talk about physical therapy, neuroscience, what is a very common misconception, misunderstanding that most people get that you have in your worker field?
So, as a clinician, oftentimes people would say, "Oh, I'm here for my pain and torture." So, physical therapy is short for pain and torture. And I think that it's a common misconception that torture is not just because we want to torture you, but it's because the evidence demonstrates that if we push you and we do certain things that have your body work in ways that might be harder than you're used to, you actually improve and get better. So while it's funny, and I always laughed when a patient would come in and say, "I'm ready for my pain and torture," and it was never actually that we were torturing them. But I think that people don't always understand that there's a real scientific underpinning for the things that we do and the why we make certain decisions in the clinic.
Yeah, you're kind of routing how they go about their path, what they do. And as a clinician, you work directly with your patients across their kind of journeys. What did that teach you along your path? Have you grown through it? What have you learned from that?
Yeah, so within patient care, I learned the importance of one, resilience, two, your support system is really important, especially within rehabilitation and really otherwise. So I think that those were kind of two really important things.
So when you talk about support system, you mean kind of they're outside,
Yeah, so we have people that are meaningful in our lives. That might be our family, it may be friends. Sometimes, someone doesn't have a family or friends, but there's
there's
other
somebody.
support systems within the community. And those things are really important so that people don't feel alone when something traumatic happens to them. And throughout recovery, those pieces play a vital role in helping somebody achieve their goals. I think with that too, the resilience of the individual within rehabilitation, sometimes life changes, and you have to really sometimes rethink what you may have planned. And it's not always something that's worse, it's just different. And so being resilient through those hard times carries people a far distance.
And I think a lot of it isn't even the physical, like you're saying, the resilience, the support isn't physical, it's mental. And supporting patients on your end often involves emotional and motivational work. So, kind of, how do you deal with that in kind of helping them?
Yeah, so it's a lot about how do you form that relationship so that you can encourage the person, can help them be more resilient. And those are really, influential, I think, in that what's called a patient and provider relationship. You have a level of trust and you can kind of help guide that person in certain ways. And as a physical therapist, I'm not a mental health professional, right? So if that's a need, you can always refer out, but you still play a vital role in helping people overcome something in their lives so that they can live more fully.
And not even the patients, but even you. What have you learned from dealing with everybody and their resilience? What have you learned from the people that you've worked with?
I think that progress is not a straight linear path. And whether that is through recovery or doing something new, learning something new, even in your life's trajectory and your career path, you're going to have ups and downs. And sometimes you have to, change your perspective and think more on the macro level. Am I improving? Am I getting to where I want to go? And I think that's important. And I think it also links to if you can have that perspective, it's easier to be resilient because there's often progress you might not always see.
Like the mini, I feel like so many people look in the big picture, like I'm not doing as much as this person, but it's more looking at the steps that you're taking for your goals. Yeah, I totally
Right.
agree.
And it's that slow and steady growth, right? That
Yeah,
slow, steady
like
progress.
little baby steps almost. And I feel like
Yeah.
everyone looks at. So eventually, your clinical work intersected with research and your role began to kind of evolve. You worked as a research coordinator at Mount Sinai and later moved into research leadership at Good Shepherd. How did research re-enter the center of your career? Because I know you talked about working, and now you're more on that end.
So research is important to me because it satisfies my curiosity. And there is something very exciting to being on the threshold of a new discovery and something that can change someone's life or change practice is really exciting for me. So in my current role, well, even just within research, the pursuit of identifying a treatment that is more effective. Or in my current role, I don't treat patients like I don't provide clinical care hands-on, but I do things to help other clinicians in the organization take evidence and translate it into practice. So it's kind of that same pursuit of improving what we do through new innovations, new knowledge, new technology that's exciting.
So, do you kind of research to your end? And is there like a middleman, or are you the ones going to the clinicians, kind of teaching them all of that?
So there's a couple things that we do.
Okay.
We have within clinical practice, there are various kind of like practice guidelines. And so we make those easily accessible and educate clinicians on those practice guidelines. And this is not just me or
Yeah.
my team only. It's a lot with the clinicians too. It's really clinical care is always involving. And so clinicians also need to maintain, what is new and up to date in my practice. So it's kind of a combination of all of those while we are improving care, we're also looking at the patient outcomes and the clinician experience and trying to create the feedback loops that allow the organization to improve those things.
Yeah, it's like all around the board, kind of all working kind of together to get it all in order.
Yeah.
Well, this is Teen Scientist. We're going to take a short break. I'm your host, Abigail Wood, here with Emily Leiter.
WDIY has been broadcasting since 1995.
This is Mayor Ken Smith. Congratulations to WDIY for signing on the air.
We're with Commissioner Frank Donches of the Bethlehem Police Department.
We welcome Dr. John of the Blend today.
Bob Dureau composed, conducted, and played much of the Schoolhouse Rock music.
Three is a magic number.
Step in the antidote to violence is to speak up against it.
WDIY for 30 years.
I'm your host, Abigail Wood, back with Emily Leiter on Teen Scientist. So, we were just focusing on kind of what you do in your job. Speaking of that, what are key initiatives that you focus on in particular in your field?
So I can talk about right now at Good Shepherd some of our key initiatives, which are reflective of the field. One, we are cultivating really like a learning-centered culture that enables clinicians to continuously learn and improve. We are also focused on preparing and developing the future of rehabilitation, and we believe that technology is a key piece to that. So we have an emphasis on advanced technologies throughout our network. That includes technologies like robotics, extended realities, which is augmented reality, virtual reality, different kinds of wearables, and 3D printing. And we are also incorporating a lot of design thinking in thinking differently about how we can design experiences for patients, caregivers, as they go through our organization.
So I know you just mentioned a bunch of different kinds of initiatives. Starting at the first one, can you kind of go more in depth of how they're used or how you use them to help your research or field?
So we have a very intentional and purposeful approach to technology where we understand the needs of our patients. We go out, we look for technologies we believe are going to provide either an improved experience and engagement for the patient in the therapy that we're delivering, a new avenue for clinicians to provide an intervention. Maybe it allows the patient to do something differently with the therapist to do something differently with that patient, and really technologies that we believe are going to ultimately improve the outcomes we achieve with our patients so that our patients can meet their goals.
That is so fascinating in kind of how incorporating technology now into that field and reality. I know you mentioned AI reality. How does that work when doing it? Is that for patients or is that more for the research end?
So specifically around augmented reality or virtual reality, there are some populations that, maybe you can practice a different skill in a virtual world that more simulates what you would do in the real world. And so for us within rehabilitation, that's more salient, and we believe that improves learning. So that allows us to achieve better outcomes. It's also fun. If you have an augmented reality, you can play a video game.
Yeah.
I mentioned pain and torture before, now becomes fun and games, right?
Is it supposed to help with like muscle memory, kind of that? Or what is it? What is the main purpose of it?
So the therapist can really tailor it to address balance or endurance, maybe trying to get the heart rate up, maybe getting more activation. It really depends on what the goals of that session are for that patient.
Which is interesting how you can kind of tweak it. It's not maybe just for one thing, it's for a bunch of things. So is it like kind of like the virtual reality like headset type of thing, or is it more?
So the VR and the AR are just the headsets.
Yeah.
Things that are maybe more connected to your body are like, we have a robotics program here. So we have robotics for our very young patients all the way up through adults. And there are different types of robotic systems. We actually were one of the first to use clinically a self-balancing exoskeleton.
Oh, wow.
And so through that, we're learning how it impacts our patients individually, and then also how over time we can achieve better outcomes through those technologies.
Yeah, kind of it's like building on each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you mentioned 3D printing kind of doing that. Could you maybe go more in depth on that?
Yes. So I would say are one of the first rehabilitation organizations to really try to explore and understand how we can apply 3D printing to improve patient care, the experience and outcomes. We have a fairly large program, and it's an opportunity for clinicians to be creative and a new tool for them to provide solutions to their patients. So our 3D printing program has delivered, over, I think, 1,500 devices to patients now. And those stem from assistive writing devices or other kinds of assistive tools, right?
Yeah.
Maybe to allow someone who has limited dexterity in their hands to hold a nail clipper or a key differently that allows them to be more independent, all the way to educational models that we use with patients or within our clinical education program. And we also have some really creative things our patients have thought up for our new toys to use within therapy. We have a HexaReach. We have a barometer that allows someone to practice their breathing without having to use their hands if they have limited mobility. And we have a really fun kind of, we develop new solutions that allow our clinicians, you know, their work to be easier. So through the 3D printing, we're able to create, maybe it is a new stand to keep a feed bag upright so that a nurse doesn't have to keep going back and forth to fix it as it kind of collapses, as it empties, right? So there's lots that you can do with 3D printing, and we are really kind of continuing to explore how that can improve the work that we do.
I think it's definitely interesting how many things you guys can create with it. And what I found is like the patient feedback and kind of designing for a patient and their needs and their, which I find very fascinating. I don't know if you would know this at all, but what would a typical, because I know it might vary for size, for matter, the types of material you're using. What is a typical, like when you design for 3D printing, how long does it take, or what is like the design process like?
It depends. There's lots of things, and maybe some of your listeners are familiar with 3D printing, but there's lots of things that you can download online that the print is already available.
Yeah.
So those are printed very quickly. But if it is something that is really specific and fit to this one need, you know, we have printed an attachment to a table that allows somebody who has a spinal cord injury the ability to play cards, you know, so they can swipe the card over to this little device on the side of the table that will then flip the card in a way that the person can pick it up and play, right? So that's like a creative application. But I love how you said really kind of this human-centered, patient-centered comments, because we really believe that the patient is the person that we're solving for, and they need to be included in the conversation. We actually hold what we call maker sprints, which is kind of like a crash course where we put together members of the community, maybe somebody who has multiple sclerosis or spinal cord injury. We understand a problem that they are having or an opportunity they would like to do. We bring in some clinicians, students, faculty, really bringing in a diverse set of expertise. And we go through what's called a human-centered design process or design thinking, and we create a new solution. And oftentimes those things can be something that's 3D printed. So it really depends on the complexity of the problem with how long it takes to produce the actual, you know, print at the end. But it can vary widely. But again, the patients, the clinician, the people that are going to use the thing are really important in that process.
It's honestly great that it can vary widely, so you can do so many things and so many capable things. So I know you mentioned about Disrupt, the conference that you hold, where it's Healthcare Initiative and Summit. Could you kind of expand on that?
Sure. So we really believe that innovation and change in healthcare, we have some really challenging problems. It's going to come from people from various backgrounds and diverse perspectives and skill sets. The conversations among those people are really going to be what lead us to impactful change. So we hold a conference every year. It's called Disrupt, a Healthcare Innovation Summit. It's planned this year for April 18th and 19th in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And we really bring together, you know, clinicians, researchers, entrepreneurs, industry leaders, students, academia, and we reimagine what is possible in healthcare. We do that through various national, really regarded, high quality speakers. We do hands-on workshops. We have a poster and platform presentation where attendees share work that they are doing, it provokes a lot of conversation. So people who are doing the work get to talk with others who may have similar challenges, and there are new ideas that spring from those conversations.
Oh, I bet. And like kind of combining research together to see how it is.
100%. And it's really, we broaden what we accept for our posters and platforms because it's research, but it's also really how curiosity and creativity, when you push those boundaries, people come up with new solutions. It might not always be research. It could be a really wowable program, or just doing a process in a different way that produces substantial improvements in the work. So we accept those kinds of projects as well.
And I think combining like a bunch of minds that maybe don't work together on a daily basis, and maybe they're in different fields or maybe different things, but maybe you haven't even thought of something that some other person is doing. So I think that's fantastic. What kind of goes into planning that conference or doing that conference on your end?
Yeah, so there is a lot of planning. We really start, it's a full year planning. We research new speakers. This year we have a theme, and that theme is curiosity. So you'll see that theme woven throughout a lot of the presentations and conversations and workshops. And we look for people who are inspirational, who really motivate change. And we have had some world-class presenters, and not even just within healthcare. We have had a retired VP of innovation from Mattel, Gene Murtha.
Wow.
He led innovation, toy innovation, and he talked about, how do we problem solve, right? That's a thing we all need to do, and how do we think differently? How do we do that?
And that's science, I think, as a whole. And anyone who wants to get into science or pursue science, you always, I think, my number one thing is why. That's what I think people, why? Or why does this happen? Or what does this do? And I think that's the main thing people need.
And we bring, we have had a really powerful nurse innovator, Rhonda Manns, do prototyping workshop with us. So hands-on, how do you build an upper extremity robotics? And it's not necessarily about the robotics itself, but how do you think about prototyping, which is applicable in many different professions? How do you do that? So we have, opportunities for people to learn different ways of thinking, and acquire some new skills that they can immediately put into practice.
Yeah, that is super cool. I'm definitely gonna check that out after this. So thank you so much, Dr. Leiter, for sharing your work and perspective. Your career highlights the connections between science, care, and community. We appreciate your time on Teen Scientists, and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Abigail Wood.